I'm your number one fan.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
My mom is dying every day.
Hello. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to Killer Cuties Podcast.
Welcome. I'm so excited to talk about I Saw the TV Glow.
You sound like an NPC. I am so excited to talk about. should we do news first?
Yeah. All right. I'll kick us off.
Okay.
Roger Corman.
Mm-hmm.
He was a legendary filmmaker who is often referred to as the King of the Bees, as in bee movies. He was behind Little Shop of Horrors and Attack of the Crab Monsters. He's passed away at 98 years old. He was a pillar in the horror community, really the movie community. John Carpenter tweeted on the night that Roger passed, saying that Roger was one of the most influential movie directors in John's life. A great friend and someone who shaped John's childhood. So large praise coming from John Carpenter.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely a sad loss.
Yeah. But 98, that's a big full life.
Yeah, for sure. On my end, switching gears entirely, 39-second teaser has been released for an upcoming movie called The Substance, which is going to star Demi Moore. The movie has been described as an explosive feminist take on body horror.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So if you want to see the teaser, it is on deadline.com.
Something tells me I'm not going to enjoy that.
Oh. Something tells me I might.
Feminist body horror? That sounds terrible.
Oh.
That sounds like I don't want to watch that.
Sounds like
like terrible as in, like, you know.
Yeah.
Eek. Okay, well. I thought Demi Moore was retired, too.
Yeah, I can't think of anything she's been in recently.
Maybe this is her renaissance.
Yeah. I'll be honest and say, like, I don't really keep up with her work, so she could have been doing a lot of things that I would probably have no idea. But.
Yeah, fair. Okay, I've got a tiny one.
Okay.
It's very niche. But okay. I thought it was interesting because I saw it on TikTok. Madeleine Pesch?
Mm-hmm.
You know, from The Strangers Chapter 1.
Yes.
She did an interview. She revealed that the axe scene from the trailer and from the movie, obviously, where she's got her face up against the door and the axe, that was not CGI. And her scream was real. Her head was on the door and there was a person on the other side of the door with an axe that chopped entirely through the wood next to her face.
Hell yeah, brother.
Yeah. We love a good practical.
We do. Although I'm sad a lot of people said that movie was ass. So...
We'll be the judges of that, and we'll probably agree.
Yeah. okay, last one for me. Sony Pictures has announced that the next sequel in the I Know What You Did Last Summer franchise already has a release date.
Oh.
It's set for July 18th in 2025. I didn't even know that they were having another movie in that franchise.
What movie is this? What number?
Technically the fourth, but a lot of people don't talk about the third one.
Okay.
So, yeah. But yeah, it's said that Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. are in talks to reprise their roles. So nothing's been officially confirmed yet, but I think Jennifer Love Hewitt said, like, earlier this year that she would be down, but she hasn't seen a script or anything, so who's to say?
So confident to have a release date of a movie you haven't even cast yet.
Yeah.
Tune in a few episodes when we announce that that movie's been pushed back. All right. As the NPC at the beginning of the episode said, we're here to talk about I Saw the TV Glow. From the mouth of the director, Jane Schoenbrunn, I Saw the TV Glow is a movie about two lonely teenagers who find each other through their shared love of a strange kind of scary, kind of sweet TV show. They get together every week to watch it, but when their obsession gets out of hand, their sense of reality gets called into question. It stars Justice Smith as Owen and Bridget Lundy Payne as Maddie. It just released May 2024, has a 6.8 currently out of 10 on IMDb, and a 65% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, and 84% Certified Fresh Critics score.
Certified Fresh.
By the critics, not by the audience.
By the critics.
Yeah, when I saw this, in theaters on Thursday of last week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It doesn't matter. And at that point, it had a like 98% critic score and like a 20% audience score. There was a huge discrepancy. So that's a little bit more aligned now. But sheesh.
Yeah.
The initial audiences did not enjoy this movie.
Yeah. Well, I guess like the initial audiences who went on to review. Yeah, I saw this yesterday, and as soon as the credits rolled, like, everybody just kind of sat there for a minute in silence. Like, everybody was like, wait, what? And then I was, like, the first person to get up and go, because as a, like, a behind the scenes for the listeners, I have this thing I like to call cave girl hours, where my body just like won't let me sleep. And so I sleep for like 4 hour increments at most. And that's been happening for like a week and a half. So I'm already like not in a great like mental fortitude spot. And I knew, I was like, oh, I'm going to start crying. And so I literally to my car and sobbed the entire way home. And then like 4 hours later, I was still crying. And I was like, guys, somebody send help, because I don't know what's happening.
Oof.
Yeah, this gave me kind of an existential crisis, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. See, now you know how I feel after watching Everything Everywhere All at Once. That's exactly what happened to me.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, this one hit a little differently. And again, I'm very tired, so that's probably like didn't help the situation.
Yeah. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I was very well rested when I saw this. And then I sent our like core group of friends a very long-winded, confused Snapchat as I was walking out of the theater. Yeah, it definitely made you feel something. I cried at the end in the theater, shamelessly. I don't know why you had to leave to cry, but
I don't know.
You were tired.
I think I like knew I had time. I was like, okay, if I can get somewhere, let's go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was funny. You were, she was telling us a story in Snapchat that had nothing to do with the movie, but like every once in a while, you'd just be like, and I just saw this movie, and I can't. And that was before I'd seen it. So I was like, what's going on in this movie?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that ending was something.
Yeah. I knew I was, yeah. I almost teared up. Well, I did kind of tear up in the theater when he was at the birthday party and just like breaks down and starts like screaming.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the part where I was like, oh, I'm cooked. It's happening.
Yeah. For those that don't know, the director and the cast, everybody that had a part in this movie has said that this is a trans allegory about like wearing a mask and figuring out a way to take off the mask and kind of be your true self.
Mm-hmm.
I don't relate to that, obviously, specifically, but very similarly, I think almost identical. I read it more as a like just very high level how to find happiness. Mm. And at the end where he's like kind of cutting himself out and like he's like shining from inside, I was like, oh my god, like he can be happy now and go on with his life and live his true life. I don't know, I read into it obviously a little bit differently, but funny how
yeah.
like that is very much what coming out being trans is about, is you're stuck in a body you don't want to be in or in a mindset you don't want to be in. And you have to go yeah. through all of this in order to find, you know, or announce, be your true self. I don't know. I'm trying to speak more, you know,
No, I like it though, because this is a movie that can be interpreted in like a thousand different ways.
Totally.
And at its core, yes, like the director has even said that they were going, like they were working through dysphoria and beginning their transition. So this movie kind of aligned with that. And I think they even said that this is a movie about recognizing something that's wrong and about the process that goes into that recognition. Mm-hmm. So even if, you know, you're not trans, I do think that that's something that is relatable to a lot of people. And yeah, I'm not trans, so I can't relate to that part. But I do think that it was kind of a broad enough experience that a lot of people in the LGBT community or period can relate to that. But yeah, I kind of saw it as, well, one interpretation that I read was that Maddie and Owen were both like substitutes for people dealing with gender dysphoria, mm-hmm. and Maddie choosing to live out their life truly, whereas Owen decided to go with what society expects them to do, and then realizing slowly that like that was not the choice that he should have made.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really interesting as well.
Really. And I mean, the movie is also very literal in that the director said that the way that they dealt with, you know, being kind of stuck is relating to or finding characters in pop culture. I'll let you talk about exactly which characters, because I know you want to. And I mean, that's exactly what's happening in the movie, right? Is the Maddie is literally relating to the TV show by going and being a part of the TV show. So
yeah. Well, and that's the thing, I think, why this movie can resonate with a lot of people, even if you're not trans or not in the community. Like, just having things that are so nostalgic and relating so much to them and having that be such a big part of your life. And then also, you can't stop the passage of time. And then all of a sudden, you're 40 years old and you rewatch these things and they don't hit the same way and everything's different and you can't stop it. And now I'm going to start spiraling again. But yeah, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, the director, Jane, also said that when they write a script, it typically starts with just an idea that gets lodged in their brain. Mm-hmm. And it's never a fully fledged idea. It's just like one thing. And with this, they said it was the idea of being haunted by an unresolved cliffhanger in a children's show, and specifically those characters in the show being in danger. And just that feeling of not having that resolution, making it really hard to exist in the real world to the point where you're almost taking on the pain of the characters in the show.
Been there. Yeah. Another thing that I thought about, I'm trying to be a lot more eloquent than I am, and I'm just not. So just take it for what it is. I feel like this movie really personified that, like, pit in your stomach feeling that you get when you finish a series, whether it's a book or a show or whatever. You know that feeling where you're just like, what the fuck do I do now?
Yeah.
I like this movie personified that for me. And I got the same feeling without knowing anything about the movie, without ever having experienced the world of like the movie or the Pink Opaque or whatever. After the movie was over, that is how I felt. I felt like I had just finished the Twilight series and I was 17 years old, or I had just, you know, I don't know, walked out of the last Hunger Games movie. I don't know. I'm doing a very bad job of
no, but you're, speaking it about this. Made you like nostalgic for something you've never even experienced.
Exactly.
Like, it was so weird.
Yeah. Yes.
I got done and I came home and I was crying and I started reading through Letterboxd reviews, which didn't help because some of the people said like the most beautiful things about like how it relates to that and nostalgia and this feeling of despair and melancholy and like going through your life and the passage of time, and I was just reading through these reviews crying even harder, and I was like, cancel the podcast, we can't do this.
Yeah. Yeah, it took us a lot of time to like build up the momentum to even start recording this morning. Which, by the way, fun fact, it's morning.
It is morning, which I feel like is easier to, it's easier to tell when we record in the daytime from my perspective.
Yes.
Because I can't block out the sun.
Yeah. I can.
So yes, it is daytime, but also, yeah, we were like, oh, we'll record at 10. It's 11 now. So, yeah. And we're like 15 minutes.
Yeah. It's like that scene in Bambi 2. where Bambi's like, 1, 2, 2. That's what we did.
I've never seen Bambi 2.
You don't need to. That's what I've seen.
I mean, after the first, that movie was too sad for me as a kid.
Yeah.
I did not like sad movies as a kid. Yeah.
And then we grow up and that's sad movies. Yay.
Yeah. Now I watch this and I'm like, should I go see it again? all right. I'm just going to start touching on some of the inspirations for this because you and I both know that I want to talk about it anyway.
Yeah. So, might as well start now.
Yes. The Pinko Pig is the TV show in the movie that the two kids are like obsessed with. Which, by the way, anybody out there who has TV connections, chop chop. Let's get it rolling because I would love to watch the Pinko Pig.
Yeah.
That shit would have been my jam.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the fictional television shows that it was inspired by were The Secret World of Alec Mack, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Are You Afraid of the Dark? Those were the ones officially listed. I also feel like there was definitely some Twin Peaks in there. Just
isn't that newer?
The vibes. No, Twin Peaks is an old show that got like a reboot.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. Old. I think it was the 90s.
Cool. Old.
I guess that's old now.
Yeah.
But yes, so definitely, I think that's also maybe why it hit so hard for me was because like I am also obsessed with a show that this show is based off of, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I definitely could tell in the movie that it was inspired, that was part of the inspiration for it. And then they decided to just like slap it right in my fucking face because throughout the film, in order to watch the show, Owen's character keeps lying to his parents and being like, oh, I'm spending the night at my friend's house. But really, he would go to Maddie's house and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a scene where she's like, I'm running away. Let's go. You're coming with me. And he's too scared. He's like, I can't do it. So he goes to the kid who he's pretending to stay at's house and is like, talks to his mom and is like, you have to tell my parents that I'm lying so that I get grounded and I don't have to go with Maddie.
Mm-hmm.
The mom is played by Tara, which A, they took her name for the Pinko Pig, and B, it's played by the woman who plays Tara in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes.
So namesake is already a reference, but then also it's Amber Benson who played Tara McClay in Buffy. And I was like, as soon as she opened the door, I was like, oh, God damn it.
Did you know it was based on Buffy before you went in?
I didn't. No. As I was watching, I was like, okay, definitely inspired by something I know.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I saw Amber and I was like, oh my God, Tara. And then I knew I was going to cry even harder. It's like, why are they putting it in my face?
Did you see there was an interview with mm-hmm. Jane Schoenbrunn and a couple of the cast, I think, where they said that the movie inspirations for like the movie as a whole, as opposed to the TV shows,
mm-hmm.
were The Mask, obviously. That might have been a joke, though, because they also said liar, liar. So that might have been a joke. But Scream.
Okay.
They straight up said that Scream was also an influence.
I love that. Because, yeah, very 90s vibe. They definitely had a lot of humor in this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I could definitely see how they pulled from that.
Yeah. But it might have been because the kid that plays the son of the mask is in Scream. So that also might have been a joke. But for your sake, we'll say that it wasn't.
I feel like you could definitely see some influences to a lot of like 90s media.
Yeah, totally. Well, it was filmed in 35, mm-hmm. the whole thing. And then the scenes for the Pink Opaque were then transferred to VHS. And that is what is produced on screen, is the 35 millimeter transferred to VHS.
Yeah.
And Betamax.
Yeah.
Which is fun.
I loved it.
Yeah. So fun.
Yeah. And they also had a lot of, not a lot, but a few 90s stars who made little cameos in it.
Mm-hmm.
Michael C. Marona and Danny Tamborelli, who were on The Adventures of Pete and Pete on Nickelodeon. They show up for a little bit. Fred Durst, the lead singer of Limp Bizkit, he plays Owen's dad.
crazy.
Yeah, I didn't even recognize him. He was always partially obscured. Frowded. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in an interview with Vulture, Jane Schoenbrunn said that their inclusions were less about reverence and more about being haunted by familiar faces.
Yes.
And I thought that was like a really smart touch of including faces that a lot of people who grew up in the 90s would recognize and be like, oh,
yeah,
I know them.
Yeah. And I think that really worked, because one thing that really struck me about this film was that the dad was, I mean, for me, very much the scary, he was very scary.
Yeah.
He was very menacing, and that I related a lot to that. I mean, my biological dad,
mm-hmm.
anger issues, and it's like an eggshell parent is what was being. And I can only imagine if that is coming from like a place of Jane knowing that growing up and being trans and having not come out yet and knowing that they are trans and their parent is an eggshell parent. That's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all the scenes with the dad were very uncomfortable for me. I mean, the whole movie was uncomfortable, but that especially.
Yeah. And Jane also kind of talked about that. Like, they touched on that a little bit in an interview. Because they kind of talked about how they wanted to include little bits of things. Like, they didn't want it to just be about, oh, Owen has an angry dad and that's a stand-in explanation for something.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of said, the idea was more, if I show you these three things and then continue to explore what I'm exploring at the center of the film, what is your relationship to the exposition?
Yeah.
And Jane themselves even was like, maybe that's a little pretentious, but that yeah. was kind of the vibe that they were going for when making the film. So,
yeah.
And I kind of like that too.
Amazing job.
Yeah. Cause it's definitely, I feel like they gave us enough information,
mm-hmm.
but also left enough up that you can interpret it in a meaningful way to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Also, the font they used for the Pink Opaque is the same font used for the opening credits of Buffy.
Oh, you were really holding that one in, weren't you?
Yeah.
Oof. That's cute. I do really love the tattoo. Super cute. Ghost of glasses.
Yeah. The visuals of this movie were incredible.
Yeah.
Huge fan.
Yeah. Mr. Melancholy. Also a very unnerving scene.
I was going to say smash, but then I pulled back and was like, maybe calm down for a second.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
if it helps, I was going to say it more as a joke.
No. Well.
Well.
They can't see our faces. It's a podcast.
For anybody listening,
she's making suggestive faces.
Me? Yeah. You started it.
I did it again.
Oh, God.
No, that was the scariest part of the whole movie. The, like, animation yeah. and then unanimation. And it was
very unnerving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the, like, zoom in, grainy picture, like, part of his face moving. Like, it was, yeah. I want a Pink Opaque show. I need it.
I don't.
I need it.
Maybe that'll be like their next short films. They'll just do a series of,
oh my God.
Jane will do a series of short films based on the Pinko Pig, which, by the way, the Pinko Pig is named after an album by a Scottish rock duo.
Yeah.
whom I have never heard of, but they're like an 80s, 90s rock duo from Scotland.
Yeah, with the Cocteau Twins? Cocteau Twins?
Cocteau?
Something? Yeah. It's a great name. I want to see it. Give it to me, Rachel. Please.
Show me to me, please. Did you know this movie was produced by Emily Stone?
Don't ever call her by her government
She wants
name.
To be called by her government
like,
name.
Like, you know her. She's credited as Emma Stone.
I know, but she wants to be called Emily.
Okay, then she can change her stage name.
She's trying to, and people aren't respecting it.
She hasn't yet.
It's all over the news.
Oh, Emily. It's like when Anne Hathaway was like, call me Annie. And it's like, no, I don't know you. What do you mean?
And that did not last.
No. Well, I don't know. I've never seen her in real life. Maybe people do call her Annie in real life. And she said that she was like, oh, like when fans come up to me, I want them to call me Annie because that's what I go by. And I'm like, not to us, you don't.
Well, it's the opposite, though, in this case. Like, Emma feels like the nickname-y. Like, Emily is more professional.
Okay, yeah, you know what I mean?
To me, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
She wants to be called Emily. I'm going to call her Emily. It doesn't feel right, though. But
it's like when Snoop Dogg wanted to be called Snoop Lion. Like, it's just not happening. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was... Wasn't that a marketing joke, though? Like, wasn't that a marketing tactic?
I don't know. Probably.
I think that was a marketing thing.
I just feel like celebrities can't... You can't just change your name like that, just off the cuff. What do you mean?
Like Machine Gun Kelly wanting to go by Machine now?
Or Machine Kelly?
Is it Machine or Machine Kelly?
I don't know. I don't ever think about that man.
Well, there was some TikTok of like a guy saying, take the gun out of your name because it's promoting violence or whatever.
Yeah. And he was like, bet I'll do it.
And then I think I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like he just wanted to go by like the Machine or something like that. I don't know.
That's one I will not respect.
I don't respect him as a person or as his name.
I do pop culturally enjoy following his on again, off again relationship with Megyn Kelly, though. That's not her name.
Megyn Kelly. No, Megan Fox?
Megyn Kelly. What the fuck? That would be some pop culture.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's. God. Why is her name even in my brain?
I don't know. And to conflate that with Megan Fox, I'm gonna be honest, I love Megan Fox, but her being with him made me be like, I don't know about that, Megan.
What's wrong with him?
He's like said on multiple occasions that minors are hot.
Ew.
That's how the whole like him and Eminem feud happened, because he was talking about Eminem's daughter and how hot she was when she was like 14 years old.
Jesus Christ.
And then he was talking about how like, I think it was Kylie Jenner. Like, years ago, he was like, I wouldn't wait until she's 18. I don't care. Like, ask any man. They're not going to wait until she's 18.
Jesus Christ.
He should be in jail.
Holy shit.
Yeah, he's gross, gross.
Maybe he does deserve Megyn Kelly. Maybe that's why I said it. A Freudian slip.
Yeah, who he should be with.
Who's Megyn Kelly?
She's like a journalist.
Oh, is she the conservative one? She spells her name really dumb.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, that's not her fault, to be clear. That's how her parents spelled it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They deserve each other. Based solely on the way she spells her name.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, okay. Back to the movie we're talking about, because I don't want to talk about The Machine.
The Machine.
Just kidding.
Disgusting.
Apparently, one of the producers of the film, we don't know if it was Emily or not, but one of the producers apparently told Jane Schoenbrunn that they needed to rewrite Owen's character because he was too passive, and the producer thought that the audience was going to be convinced that Owen murdered Maddie when Maddie disappeared, which is crazy because that thought never even crossed my mind.
Well, was it rewritten? Did they rewrite it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because Jane had said that his passiveness was key to the story. And so I think they kept that. I mean, he was very passive in the movie. So I think that they kept that in. And yeah, I don't know. I just never thought that he hurt her. Did you think that?
No, the only thing I thought about his character was that maybe he was on the spectrum.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like that is fair.
Which, if he is, I'm so glad it was not spelled out.
Because
That would have felt gimmicky.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like there were a few kind of things that were touched on like that. Like, it's kind of hinted at that he might be asexual because he's like, Do you like boys? Do you like girls?
Yeah.
I like TV shows.
Yeah. Not
any interest in that type of like romantic exploration.
Yeah.
Also, one last connection to Buffy that I'm going to make, which maybe you should, like, earmuffs.
I mean, I've seen the most important episode of Buffy.
That's true. I also cried during that episode. for those wondering, if you've seen Buffy, she watched The Body. So.
The Fruit Punch?
Don't call it that.
Episode.
It's The Body episode.
Okay.
But anyways, so in the movie, season 6, episode 1 of The Pink Opaque, because it gets canceled at season 5. So then Maddie comes back and starts talking about like what season 6 was going to be. It was supposed to include the girls being brought back from the Midnight Realm and climbing their way out of their graves. And season 6, episode 1 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer is about Buffy climbing her way out of her grave.
Love that.
Yeah.
I like that.
I do too.
Yeah. We know.
You will too once you watch it.
I need to.
Okay. When?
I'll start it. As soon as I'm done finishing watching the Transformers movies with my husband.
I thought you were going to say Teen Wolf.
I feel like I got to the part in Teen Wolf that you meant for me to stop at.
No, you definitely didn't.
Okay. Fine, after Teen Wolf and Transformers.
Yeah, I know you didn't, because you were keeping me updated, and you didn't even finish 3A.
No.
3B is where the money's at, Katie.
Okay. All right. That show's done, right?
Teen Wolf, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yay.
Anyway.
If I can't live in my TV shows, I'm going to have to make you, so.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Well, what else? Oh, I have another thing.
Mm.
The director commissioned 16 original songs from their favorite bands for the film soundtrack. So everything from the soundtrack, which has the coolest fucking vinyl. I don't know if you've seen the vinyl for it on A24.com. It's pink and it's got Candyman? Ice Cream Man? The Ice Cream Man on it. What's his name?
Damn, Mr. they got the licensing
for no. Candyman. Not Candyman.
I think it was Mr. Sprinkles.
Mr. Sprinkles. Well, they call him Ice Cream Man. Owen calls him Ice Cream Man at one point, I think. But anyway.
Mr. Sprinkly.
Yeah. Mr. Sprinkly is on the vinyl, and it's like this bright pink. Oh, it's so cute. I love it.
I love that. I want it.
I've been thinking about – I told – my family that for my birthday I want a good record player, and they're like, do you have any records? And I'm like, why would I buy records if I don't have a record player? Like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been thinking about, like, what do I want my first vinyl to be?
Oh,
and that could
that's
be one.
So exciting.
Yeah,
it's
probably gonna be the like amber version of Twilight New Moon soundtrack, but if I'm being honest,
stay true to yourself.
Yeah, I should. You're right.
I didn't get to choose my first vinyl.
Was it gifted to you?
Yes, I bought a record player because I got all of my parents' records that, yeah, when my dad passed away, he had them all, so I got them all.
Nice.
Yeah. lot of ABBA.
Lots of
ABBA. Lot of ABBA.
Yeah. There's a lot of ABBA in there.
And I love it.
Yep.
Yeah. ABBA, Peter Gabriel, Fleetwood Mac. A lot of Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks, which...
Experienced best on vinyl.
Stevie Nicks.
Mm-hmm. And then now, Harry Styles.
I do have Harry Styles. I have two of his records. I love Harry Styles.
Yeah. That was our first concert together.
It was our only concert together.
Don't say that.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, our first of many. I actually want, I've been trying to get, there's a musical episode of Buffy and I want that on vinyl, but it's sold out immediately. And then yeah. Like, it's on eBay for like $200. So
$200.
Bro, people love Buffy.
People love vinyl. It's a
great musical episode too. I listen to it on Spotify all the time.
What's the best musical episode?
Once More with Feeling.
On
In Buffy.
That's a Taylor Swift reference.
No, it's not because it came out in the 90s. Or, well, I guess it's probably 2000s, but.
No, I mean, like, Taylor Swift made that reference. Makes a reference.
Great.
Funny.
It's a great episode.
Okay, I believe you.
I didn't mention what? Taylor Swift?
That she says that. She says that, like, very menacingly, and it's, like, the most iconic lyric in the song. She says that. In one of her songs on her new album.
Oh, I'm going to be honest. I listened to like the first like couple minutes of each song and I couldn't get into any of them.
You didn't even get to any of the bridges.
Oh, I did. It just wasn't for me. I'm so sorry.
Yes. Weird. But anyway, what were we even talking about? Oh, yeah. The director commissioned all the songs.
Yeah. The soundtrack slapped too.
Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah.
The song, I don't think it's called I Saw the TV Glow, but where they say I Saw the TV Glow is very, very good.
Yeah. Isn't that where Phoebe Bridgers has a cameo, too?
Is she in the movie?
I'm pretty sure she's the, like, bass player in the band.
I mean, I know she's on one of the songs, but I didn't know if she was on that song.
Oh, I could have swore it was her, but also, I'm not, like, super familiar with Phoebe Bridgers' face, so maybe I was mistaken. But I thought she was the bass player. Could definitely be wrong.
Sounds...
She's credited in the cast with the other band members.
Yeah.
She's not credited as a band member, but she's credited as herself with, like, in the middle of all the other band members.
So. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm listening to the song right now. It's called Claw Machine.
Oh, okay.
That's the one that she's credited on.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's the song that you're talking about that they're playing in the movie.
Yeah. I think it was her, but I don't know. Somebody who knows better maybe can tell me if that was her face or not. It was a blonde girl. I was like, oh, is that Phoebe?
Yeah. Well, should we rate it?
Okay.
All right. How scary did you think it was?
I gave it a 1, but I think I'm going to amend that to a 1.5 because it was very, like, unnerving.
It wasn't outright
scary, but it did kind of leave you with like a feeling of dread.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it deserves a little credit for that.
Yeah.
What about you?
I agree. I gave it a 2.
Okay.
Because it was menacing. It was
it was just standing there menacingly.
Yeah, exactly. It was uncomfortable and yes.
Yeah. How sexy did you think it was?
I didn't. Not even a little.
Okay.
So I give it a 1.
Yeah.
You?
I give it a 1.5. Only just because of, like, the vibe, the aesthetics, the 90s. You know what I mean?
No.
Oh. But it's, see, like, the same way you thought Annihilation's aesthetic was hot.
It is.
Okay, so this is an aesthetic that's hot to me, like neon colors and 90s vibes and grainy film.
Okay.
That's hot.
Okay. Well, okay. How fucked up did you think it was?
I gave it a 1.5, but I'm also wondering if I should add it up just because it impacted me for sure. While watching it, I didn't necessarily think anything was super fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, the way it impacted me, I do have to give it a little credit for that.
Yeah. And that's one thing I struggle with when we're rating these things is like, okay, do I put the impact under fucked up or do I put the impact under sexy? Do I put the, like, do I put it under overall?
I think it depends on how it impacts you.
Yeah.
This impacted me in a fucked up way. Yes.
Yeah.
That it goes there and I'll give it a 2.
Yeah. Okay.
What about you?
I also gave it a 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah.
I mean, it generally when I'm rating things fucked up, I'm thinking like not this.
Yeah. Agreed.
Which I guess I don't really have to explain much more than that. But
it definitely is a movie that gets under your skin.
Yeah. It's unnerving.
At least it got under mine.
Yeah.
Maybe some people are built different and they're better, but like not me.
I mean, I would hope that most people can relate to this in a way that it's a little fucked up.
But then I think, like, my sister would probably watch this and be like, that was dumb. I just wasted an hour and a half.
Your sister doesn't strike me as the kind of person to watch and critique movies of this nature.
That's true. Yeah. She's not really a horror movie fan at all. Overall, what did you give it?
I went back and forth.
Still deciding?
Yeah, I went back and forth a lot. I landed on a 3.
Okay.
I was going to cut it down the middle at a 2.5 because it was almost inaccessible for a lot of people. And I think accessibility is important in a movie.
Mm.
But I do think that it's accessible to everyone. I think everybody can learn, appreciate something from this movie.
Yeah.
And it was beautifully shot. I did love the aesthetic. I didn't think that made it sexy. But the 90s aesthetic definitely did something for me. Not sexually. Like some people. I don't know. It's a good movie. I will probably watch it again later. Not now. I need to give it some time.
Yeah.
Because it was really uncomfortable to watch. Especially... What's his name?
Justice Smith?
No. Well, yeah, I guess, yeah.
Are you talking about the ice cream man, Mr. Sprinkly? The moon guy?
No.
Mr. Melancholy?
No.
Who was...
The main character.
That's Owen, Justice Smith.
Owen. Yeah, Justice Smith. Yeah. Well, I was going to say Owen's performance, but it's really Justice Smith's performance, which is why I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that works. It was very hard to watch.
Yeah.
Because you really feel for him the entire movie. Like, uncomfortably, you are put in his shoes and just, like... And maybe that's what was why I ranked it what I did for fucked up, really. Mm. But it did affect, like, my overall score of the movie. Like, it was so uncomfortable to be put in his shoes the way that you were.
Got it. That brought it down a little bit?
No. That brought it up.
Well, you've said that 3 is a bad score, so I'm thinking you did not like this movie, right? Because that's you've said that.
Yeah, well, I mean, 3 is a 60.
So you hated it.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. I did like it, and I think that I will watch it again, but it was so uncomfortable to watch. I won't be watching it again anytime soon.
Got it. So what brought the score down? What did you not like about the film?
That it's not totally accessible. It was a little big brain.
Okay. You don't like an artsy movie?
I mean, I do like some artsy movies. I liked this movie.
You know, you hated it. That's what you say to me every time I rate something 3.
No. It's different.
Oh, it's different when you rate it a 3?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Because you go out and rate... You like these kinds of movies. That's...
What?
Horror movies, I mean.
Yeah. I don't think 3 is a bad
score.
Yeah,
so when you're like, oh, a 5. Like, okay. You like horror movies. You know?
My 5s don't mean anything to you?
No, they do.
Oh, we're fighting now.
Okay.
Okay, so you don't like horror movies, so a 3 is a good rating for you.
No, I do like horror movies, but it's not
the
same.
Well, now what's the truth, Katie?
It's not the same. You're forcing me to watch them.
You asked for this.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
The amount of contradictions you just made to yourself.
I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Crazy.
I did like this movie, but it was not the best movie I've ever seen. That's all that it is.
That's fair.
That's all that it is. And it was really hard to watch.
It was, yeah. I'm honestly just kind of giving you a little shit.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. It makes the rewatchability. You're always the rewatchability one. Oh, it's got rewatchability. That's what you say.
Yeah, I do like rewatchability.
And this does not have that because I don't want to go through that again soon, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I'm going to say.
Great.
Thanks. Okay, now your turn.
I do want to watch this again. No doubt about it. I'm ready to get hurt again.
Oh, God.
I actually really like this. I gave it a 4 out of 5. I don't know what happened, but actually surprised I made it through the recording without sobbing.
Oh, my God. Like,
I couldn't stop. It felt so personal and so relatable and, like, and it wasn't even made for, like, it wasn't even about that, right? But I think that's, like, the beauty of the film is that it was made as this allegory for one thing, but it's still relatable to a lot of different people. And, yeah, I don't know. It gave me an existential crisis, and I really liked it, and I liked the visuals. And I don't know if I'm ever going to stop thinking about him sobbing at the birthday party and then apologizing to people for it. Yeah.
That is exactly what I'm talking about. Him walking down the aisle saying sorry was so fucking hard to watch.
And him struggling to breathe and, like, that being such a relatable thing when you're, like, not being who you truly are and, like, just a physical manifestation of that. And I just, I don't know. I want to go see it again. I really liked it.
Fucking masochist over here.
Yeah, maybe.
I have enough going on. I don't need to be a masochist in that regard. But you know what? If you gotta feel something, you gotta feel something.
I probably shouldn't, but
you should sleep instead.
Yeah, that's step one. I'm gonna get a good night's sleep. And then step two, I get hurt again. Yeah. I go watch this movie. Next time I'm just gonna sob in the theater. I won't care who's looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Would you survive?
Nobody died. This wasn't even a horror movie. They didn't mention that at all during our 54 minutes conversation of this horror movie. But I don't even really think this is a horror movie.
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, not in like the typical sense that you think of it, but I think it's unnerving and...
Yeah, it's a scary drama.
Has that feeling of dread.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a horror drama.
Okay.
But yeah, I definitely think it has elements of horror in it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Would you survive?
Yeah, I think so. Kind of depends on, like, your interpretation of it, right?
Yeah, I mean...
Is Owen actually trapped? Is he slowly dying in this coffin? Being buried under the ground? So I'm going to be honest, if someone came up to me in my life right now and was like... You're actually in Buffy, and you're buried, and you have to go bury yourself again to get out. I'd be like, okay, buddy. Step away from me.
Yeah. Well, I think that was his reaction.
Yeah. But it's also, I mean, the whole movie's kind of metaphorical, so I think we can give ourselves a pass and say that we survive.
Yeah. Well, and survive and thrive are two different things.
That's true. I would survive. I don't think I'd thrive.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to predict next week's movie?
Do I get to?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do. Maybe I'm a little ahead of myself.
Yeah, you are.
Oh.
As a behind the scenes, Katie has already watched the films we will be talking about in our 75th episode. But... We're only on episode 72 right now. This is episode 72.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah. We got a few in between.
Seriously?
Just two more episodes.
Yeah. But that's a fun little spoiler, though.
Yeah. Take that for what you will.
Yeah.
Okay. So next week, we are going to be talking about the movie Tremors.
Oh, the earthquake movie. The earthquake cave movie.
The earthquake, I can't say that. The earthquake cave movie. Tell me about it.
I've been like really wanting to watch this one. People talk about it on TikTok all the time, but I skip.
Oh, nice. I'm so proud of you.
But I'm pretty sure it's Cave Earthquake.
Great.
And there's monsters? No, I don't think so. So it's the world is struck by almost endless earthquakes, constant earthquakes.
All the time.
And the only places that have held up are caves.
Solid.
Yeah. So they have to go into the caves. And you know what? There are monsters. Where an ancient society of beings have been able to survive. Oh my God. Can you imagine? This was a dinosaur movie. It's not though. But that would be really cool. Have been able to survive underground because the tremors don't hit below the crust.
Yeah.
Of the earth. So very similar to that other cave movie we watched. There's this like.
The Descent?
Yeah. There's this like pale. They've been able to live underground.
Yeah.
But now.
Mm-hmm.
The tremors are coming to affect the caves. So they have to like fight their way. Who's going to be the ones to go up above ground? Is it going to be the modern day humans that are went to the caves to escape, or the ancient species of whatever? Who's going to get out? And it's going to be the humans. It's going to be the humans because I think there's a sequel.
Great. Tremors is not about earthquakes.
Is it about caves?
It is not about caves. It is a monster comedy horror film.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Starring Kevin Bacon.
Oh, that's right. Oh, shit. We talked about it during Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Creature feature?
It is a creature feature.
Is Kevin the creature featured?
No.
No.
Kevin's a man.
Okay.
I think you might be able to argue that the creatures are a little dinosaur-y. Not an appearance, but
ancient and survived a meteor?
Ancient.
Are they aliens?
I don't think so.
There's one thing I love, it's an ancient alien.
I don't know if they ever like fully. I'm sure they do. Quite a few Tremors movies.
Are they lizardy? Is that why they're dinosaur-y?
No, they're old. Been here a long time.
That sounds like dinosaurs.
That's why I said you could make an argument.
Okay. I'm into it.
Yeah.
Funny how everything I was sure about is not what it is, and everything I was like, oh, it's probably not that, is definitely what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Cute.
But yeah, this movie was made in the 90s. It came out in 1990, and we just did a movie reminiscing on the 90s. So what perfect timing.
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing.
Cute. All right. Well, we'll chat about it next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, isn't it? Sorry for that. Anyways. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
I'm sorry you had to hear all of that. And also, we'll see you next week when we talk about Tremors.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.